Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 166. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Ken Phillips. What is up, good sir?
I'm struggling this week. I think, you know, I mentioned that to you earlier. I don't know. I just haven't been sleeping well at all this week. I mean, it's like I go to sleep at the right time, wake up, and I'm just feeling like stiff and sore and like not rested, which is not very fun.
Well, you know, we went ahead and bought some expensive pillows for ourselves this past week. And I would say that they are aiding my sleep. Evidently, I am not snoring as loudly, which is probably a good sign. My rest has felt pretty restful, because it's kind of similar to, I know that they have the bed cushions now that they ship in a small package and you just kind of like pop it open and it grows to its proper size. Cause I want to say that a lot of those, purple mattress.
Purple. Yeah, we have the purple, actually.
So in other companies like that, well, this pillow was very similar to that. Like, it was shrink-wrapped into a smaller package, and then you fluff it in the dryer for 20 minutes. And then use it.
So was it like a memory foam pillow, or what kind of material was it?
I forget what it was made out of exactly. She's the one that purchased them. So that's why I don't remember the exact specifications. Was not yours truly footing this particular bill. And I can't remember the brand name, or else I would probably look that up right now to try to be useful.
Yeah, well, it's just been
a not a restful
groggy
week
sort of
for
day
you.
For me. Yeah, it's been a groggy sort of day for me, for sure. I think I broke some kind of record for most yawns that I've ever done in a day. here I am, and I think we're going to record one for the ages. I guess I'm going to call it right now. Babe Ruth, calling my shot here.
Oh, well, it just reminds me, and it's something that we've been talking about on the wrestling shows, but there's this one match that they keep on calling it the greatest wrestling match ever, and like they just decided to start hyping it that way weeks ago. Now I'm like, how can you call something the greatest wrestling match ever if it hasn't been wrestled yet? Like, and plus, if you're going to call it that, that is some pretty lofty expectations to have to live up to.
Yeah, that's really bold. I'm trying to think if, like, a sports league would ever say that an upcoming game was going to be ever. That doesn't seem completely out of, you know, the real possibilities for the NFL to say or something like that.
Oh,
but
right.
It does seem like they would probably come close to that, but I don't think they would actually say this would be the greatest game ever. everybody looked up their matches and things, or would I don't think the UFC would say that either.
They always kind of generalize, you know, like, there's a lot of, this could be one of the greatest matches I've ever seen, and things of that nature, or, you know, there's usually, like, some type of qualifier, to it to kind of make it a little more specific, like, hey, this is one of the best heavyweight matchups ever, and it's just like, oh, well, that's kind of narrow, you know, if you think about it, it's narrowing the field. Dumb people just kind of get mad that they're hyping it up too much, but Yeah, I always do feel like they use some qualifiers more times than not, instead of trying to force that, like the WWE is, or like you are by calling the shot.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess.
Well, one easy topic for us to hit out of the park is talking about one of our favorite topics from the paw part of us. That would be Sheetz, the convenience store based in our fine town of growing up, Altoona, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, that headquartered in Altoona, Pennsylvania, our hometown. Apparently, they have been expanding, but as of yet, not really made great inroads into Ohio. This could, I feel like this could be like their most furthest west location.
Yeah, because I believe that the other sites that they picked are on the periphery of Columbus. Because I want to say that it was Grove City, maybe, that they were going at, that the site that they picked. And I'm just like, oh, I'm not driving down there to stop into Sheetz. Like, there might be some things I need to go down to that neck of the woods that I can swing into, but this location that they're proposing for, because oh yeah, so the two other proposed Sheetz are, I think, are further east in Columbus also. Not only are they in the suburbs, this one is back basically where we used to live. And it's kind of funny that there were a couple of issues that got brought up in the article, because the problem that they're saying, that part of the problem with the site is that there's a housing complex right behind it. And I do remember knowing a number of people that ended up living in that complex. And it would kind of suck to live behind a gas station. Like directly behind a gas. Like, 'cause they'd have the strip mall on one side, the mini strip mall on one side, and then a gas station on the other, and they're gonna drive in between both of those to get to their house. Along with the other drive to come into that complex comes through a bank parking lot too, which I can't believe there aren't more accidents there, to be completely honest with you, because there's a lot of traffic coming through that area between the bank ATM and people actually just going to their house.
Yeah,
That area is a mess.
it's always strange when you have to go through a parking lot to get to your apartment. Because my sister-in-law lived in a building that was a similar setup up near Polaris, where you would have to go in to like a
Oh.
BP parking lot or something to like, and then go around, wind around behind to get into their apartment. So I guess it's been done before, but yeah, that sounds like particularly egregious layout there for an apartment building.
Yeah, but I would see, like, from the landowner's standpoint, I definitely understand trying to transform that area a little bit, because there have been a number of restaurants, because one of the other places they're thinking of taking over to Budget and what is that? An Old Winking Lizard. And that
What's
Winking
that for?
Lizard never recovered after they closed for like a year and a half for renovations, and it never bounced back after that. Like, those renovations took entirely too long.
But they did a lot of changes in there, I think, right? And
Oh,
changed the layout.
yeah, like, completely changed the layout. There was like there, 'cause there were a lot of levels. Like, there were like four or five different floor levels in that place. Like, it was a mess. Like, well, part of the reason was because it was an old building that was split into two buildings originally.
Oh,
no. Hold on. That was the second restaurant that was there that was split into two different restaurants. Because it was 55 Grill when you and I moved here, and then it became, because I remember with the ex and I, the one time we may or may not have participated in some illicit drugs and went up to the all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet that was on the one side of the restaurant. And that was a good time.
You ate a lot that night.
Yeah, I ate a lot that night. If I ate that much now, I would probably gain like 60 pounds.
Was that the original Winking Lizard location?
No. Because the original one was up there on 23.
Maybe this was the first one in Columbus or something.
Well, that was the first one in Columbus proper, yeah, at that site. Because the other one, I don't think that's... I think it might be Worthington or something else. And not Columbus.
Yeah. I remember reading a different article about that one, and yeah, they mentioned that you know, they were trying to do that renovation to kind of improve their business, but it just became profitable after that. So yeah, they ended up closing that one down.
Well, and it's always just been kind of tough to get to that location, and I guess that's kind of getting back to the sheets a little bit, like. They've had a, like, Winking Lizard, and now that I've seen that corner for, like, 20-plus years at this point, you know, no restaurant has really lasted longer than the Winking Lizard, and that still didn't last particularly long. I can definitely understand wanting to change what's going on at that site to... it's not going to revitalize things, but... maybe make better use of that land than they are currently doing. Because that Winking Lizard building's just been empty since Winking Lizard left. Like, no one's picked it up.
Yeah, it's like they're going to be trying to... the idea that they have is to put a pretty big gas station in there. 6,077 square foot guest restaurant with indoor and outdoor seating. And six double-sided... gas pumps. So
yeah, and I would definitely be more prone to go over there because there are two breweries over in that neck of the woods. There's one down off of Reed Road there, or Reed or Durker, now somewhere in particular, or nowhere in particular, I can't remember. It was somewhere in particular, I believe. That's there, and there's another one off of 161. It's a sour place. Why is it escaping me currently? But it is. So yeah, I would definitely visit if there's a Sheetz ends up there. I would definitely end up swinging into that Sheetz at some point just to get some Sheetz points, baby. I don't get enough. Going back to Altoona.
Yeah. I mean, this would have been quite epic. You know, I feel like they were about 15 years too late. They had this up there when we were within walking distance. I mean, I think we would have been making MTO runs quite frequently.
Yeah, that definitely would have been an MTO haven late at night had that been in there. I mean, considering that there... and the other reason it makes sense is there's a speedway there, and there's a... is that a marathon on another corner? It wouldn't be surprising to just have all gas stations on those corners, too.
Further down in this article, they're saying that there would be improvements as part of the project. Go down would be widened, and two new turn lanes would added. Brackenhouse Boulevard north of the site would be widened as well, and the two current curb cuts to the property closed and moved. So I think they would probably be trying to address some of the access issues that we're talking about there. So I don't know. It's exciting. I'd be excited just because that would still be closer for me than, although Obetz, I think they said the other site was.
Obetz. Okay.
That's a little far.
Yeah, that's a little much because there isn't anything down in that neck of the woods for us to, like, because it's kind of funny. I guess I don't even feel like we drive that way. You know, even when we're going south, I guess we don't go that way. Like, 71 isn't, you don't go past Obetz on 71, do you? Because it's 71 to Cincinnati or 33 to go down to the Athens area. And those are the two major kind of south routes that I take.
You know, we were just driving. We went to pick up food at this place that's on Parsons Ave, kind of near where I used to live in Old Town. But that first of all, that area seems like it's improved quite a bit since lived there on Parsons. They've really cleaned up a lot of the buildings over there. There was kind of a nice little gourmet hot dog and microbrew place that we stopped at and got some food.
Yeah, it looks, we take that, I take the wife to work that way sometimes. And the only thing that I'm bummed about is that they've gotten rid of the bar that was the site of one of my worst ever dates. When the woman forgot that we were going on a date and showed up drunk and then yelled at me for not getting her a beer and a shot, even though she said she was trying to sober up.
Wow. That does sound like a pretty tough time.
And then she started talking about going to stopping drinking. I'm just like, I don't think that's going to work out for you. I didn't say that out loud because it would have been even more rude than what was going on. But I was a little bit nostalgic about that bar for all the wrong reasons, but it is not there anymore. That area has cleaned up. Like, I'll never forget the fact that you had a rose bush stolen out of your yard.
Yeah, there was I think two of them. Were they roses? I forget. There was some kind of lilac or something, but yeah.
Yeah, it was some type of flower. Like, I remember coming over and seeing a hole in your yard. I'm like, huh?
Yeah, that, not cool, whoever did that. My question was, Parsons Avenue, there's all these signs that say Gateway South, along Parsons Avenue, let's say like Parsons Avenue, Gateway to the South. And I'm just trying to like head around that one. Like, south of what? Like, I don't think Parsons Avenue goes all the way down to anything. I don't consider that to be the Gateway to the South.
Yeah, like, even the south of Columbus doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right. Like, if you were meaning that in the sense of South Columbus, still isn't very clear to me. When you say Gateway to the South, that to me, southern United States, I would say.
Yeah, I think that belongs strictly to Florence, Kentucky. When you come in and you see the water tower that says Florence, y'all, I think you're officially in the South when you see that.
good case to be made there. I also looked up the phrase, and apparently that is a nickname for Louisville, Kentucky, Gateway to the South.
Oh.
Did not find any more information about the avenue being the said main gateway.
You should not at all find news about that. I would almost be disappointed in Google if there was such information.
Yeah, it was not forthcoming at all. So that kind of confirmed to me that that was a BS slogan.
Oh, man.
But you know what would not be BS this week, Kevin?
What, Ken?
The SpaceX crew dragon pulled off a picture-perfect docking at the space station.
I am going to be... I've got to admit, I was super bummed. The wife goes into work Monday, Wednesday now. So I was back here on Wednesday, and I was watching the whole countdown. They were down to like half an hour until launch, and they scrubbed, and I was completely bummed because I was going to be able to watch it and then go pick her up. But I ended up missing the Saturday launch then, but I did see the news of the docking, the successful docking at the International Space Station. Which is pretty cool.
I feel like this would be, a bright point for people. There's a lot of things wrong with the world these days. But at least somebody was able... Like, this is the first time they launched a rocket up to the space station or into space at all, I would say, for... I don't know.
Yeah, it was... they said that, 10 years, or it's close to 10 years... that there's been a rocket launched from the United States up to the International Space Station. And then, obviously, since SpaceX is involved, it's the first time that a independent company has successfully launched a rocket into space.
Yeah. Seems like they're hiring astronaut-type people to pilot these SpaceX craft, but...
Yeah, it was kind of funny how much they were talking about. They were being very specific, because I watched like 5 hours of hype until the launch or something like that, or 3 hours. They kept on talking about how it was NASA astronauts. And, obviously they're still using Cape Canaveral because there are just some infrastructure things that are probably not worth building multiple times. Launch pads are kind of crazy. Like, you should probably not be building a bunch of those all over the world. Like, that's a lot of concrete, man.
And I think one of the reasons that they built in Cape Canaveral in the first place was because it's like far south in the States. So like the closer you get to the equator, like the faster the Earth's rotation can kind of help you get velocity, apparently.
Oh.
At least I remember reading at one point. So it makes it kind of easier to launch spaceships closer to the equator, apparently.
I guess that would make some level of sense. I believe the other main location is in Houston, which is somewhat south there in the great state of Texas. Well, I shouldn't say somewhat south. It's on the goddamn coast on the Gulf side. So, yeah, it's pretty far south. I guess if the two main launch points in the United States are both that far south, think that there's at least some level of logic that seems to, or some level of evidence, actual evidence that support the theory.
Yeah. So what do you think about these suits that these guys are wearing, Kevin.
Oh, I think they're pretty snazzy. I mean, they are definitely a little minimalist, which I am always for. And I need to pull it back up here, the picture, because I know that I saw it earlier. But, oh yeah, there it is. You know, it feels very sci-fi-y. Which isn't really a bad thing. You know, it almost makes them look like superheroes. I don't know if maybe that would help. I mean, I guess I always liked the giant kind of Michelin man that the astronauts were when we were young. But maybe they feel like they need astronauts to look a little more snazzy these days to get a little more attention.
Yeah, I'd say that the design is, definitely more modern than what we're used to seeing. And also the controls look like, giant touchscreens that people are working with. It's not like a row of buttons anymore. It's definitely a little more modernized, I guess, than like the space shuttle program that we grew up watching. I don't know, something about it I don't like, but it's probably a minor quibble. It just reminds me of like Lego Men for some reason.
Yeah, I can definitely get that vibe off of those helmets. That's maybe a little bit disconcerting that a Lego is going up into space.
But it worked, I guess. That's that's good news.
Yeah, that is very good news.
And you got constraints about like making the spacesuit function, to protect astronauts and things like that. So there's probably some constraints they're dealing with there in terms of design.
And I'm not surprised that the suits look different. Like, just even sports, I'm thinking about sportswear has kind of come quite a ways from when we were kids. And even the last, 5-10 years... It's just like, there's kind of a bunch of weird improvements. Even like, hey, we know how to make better socks. And it's just like, oh, okay. Sure. If that's going to help me run faster, I guess I'm good with better socks. Sure. The spacesuit probably can debulk a little bit just from fabric technologies, I would say.
It's got to make it easier for them to move around and control the ship and perform or whatever else they got to do if they're not getting trapped by the encumbered by such a big so it probably makes a lot of sense. But speaking of sports there, Kevin, I had heard a rumor, and I don't know if you saw this at all, but Pittsburgh Steelers are there's talk of them switching back their number font back to the block letters from kind of the more rounded, slimmed down text that they have been using on their jerseys.
Oh,
more of a throwback there. I don't know.
I did not see this controversy come up. You have caught me unawares, sir.
Yeah. That one really up on me because I feel like I can always remember them having the big block letters when we were younger watching football. And then I just totally missed the point when they switched it over. And then one day I was like, wait a minute. Those numbers used to be different.
I think it's always been a slow grinding change for the Steelers. Like, there's nothing big that ever happens. Like, it's just all these little things. And then, like you said, it's like one of those things that's like one day you're like, oh, shit, that looks completely different. Like, and it's probably been different for like three seasons, but for some reason you just kind of look at it in the right light and you're like, oh, that's what it is. Like it finally all comes together in your brain.
Yeah. Well, for some reason there was like a somewhat, I guess, large group of fans who was asking for them to return to the block style numbers. So I don't know if they see that happen or not, but it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, I guess. It would be, I think, like all the teams basically have moved over to like newer number. It would be kind of weird, I think, at this point to see it, but I think that they are, some of their like third jerseys have been incorporated that style font.
Oh, because I'll tell you what, I don't know if. Yeah, because these look pretty square, honestly. Like, it's a TJ Watt picture and even a Mason Rudolph picture. They all look pretty square to me, to be honest with you. It must be the font on the back of the jersey. Because those numbers are definitely blocky. Like, because they look kind of similar to... Ugh, man, some Cordell Stewart number 10, baby.
Well, there is an entire P article just dealing with the logos and uniforms of the Pittsburgh Steelers. According to this, they switched over under font in 1997.
Oh, yeah, I think I just found...
yeah.
The past two seasons they brought back the block numbers. So that would account for TJ Watt and Mason Rudolph having the block numbers. Since it's been the last two seasons. And I guess I'm not that prickly about that. Now I want to see the rounded ones.
Well, I think if you are on that same page that I was looking at, you can scroll down towards the bottom and see illustration of one jersey at least with the newer numbers, but. I don't know. Just thought that would be something you might be interested in, Kevin. Just bring that on you.
Oh, I definitely see the more rounded numbers here. Oh, yeah. I don't know. It's pretty minor.
Oh, yeah. Well, just to kind of, yeah.
Because I'm looking at... And interestingly enough, it's like a Willie Parker and a Juju. So it's a 39 and a 29. And, and there we go. That's probably more. But, yeah, the nines are really... They're quite a bit different, but I get... Neither one is offensive to me.
Yeah.
Like, I guess I don't really prefer one over the other. Like, that's one of those ones that I just... Like, your font's going to be pretty bad for me to get annoyed with it.
Too worked up. They're not going to use, like, Comic Sans or anything.
Yeah, it's like... As long as they don't go with, like, Broadway font, we'll be okay.
Times New Roman. Yeah. Well...
They better not steal the copper plate Gothic that I use all the time.
That would be a dreadful thing for them to do to you, Kevin. So, I guess... To continue with a little bit of the space talk here, since we were discussing, you know, astronauts and things. The didn't talk about this at the time, but this was a this article was fairly recently. Yeah, May 9th. It was a interview with let's see, what is this guy? Alexander Wendt, a professor of international relations at Ohio State University. The Ohio State University. I don't know what the fuck they were thinking.
Yeah, they give you your paycheck, sir, so you better get that right.
I'm going to need to write a letter to the editor here. We're done with our podcast.
You're going to have to write the Ohio State University on a chalkboard 100 times after we're done with the show.
So this guy is a professor of international relations, but also a amateur ufologist. So wrote an academic article about the political implications of UFOs in 2008, and then also gave a TED talk about calling out the taboo against studying UFOs. So he's probably one of the few, you know, scientists and, you know, real scientists, I guess, who's actually studying UFOs, thinking about them in like a kind of a serious way. So this is heavily, I guess, referring to some of the footage that the Pentagon has released recently showing unidentified flying objects in action. I did see some of the video myself, and it certainly seems like there's something there flying around.
Well, there's always the my father-in-law was in the Air Force, and he swears that he saw a UFO while in flight one time. I think he's going to go to his grave saying he found it, or that he saw a UFO. And it wasn't surprising. I had suggested to you, one of those videos was filmed by Commander David Fravor, who ended up going on Joe Rogan's podcast. I don't know why he didn't come on Stunt Granny first, but whatever.
Kind of a dumb movie.
I don't know why he'd do that, but he was one of the guys that was he was piloting an aircraft and saw a UFO, and he is I would say 100% convinced that there are extraterrestrials that happen to fly in our orbit.
Yeah, I did also do a lot of that interview, and he was very, very much on the side of the alien origin, and I guess I'm not all the way there yet, but you know, it did look like a UFO in terms of unidentified flying objects, without. You know, it could be a UFO and actually not from outer space, I guess, as well.
Yeah, that's the other thing that the professor, and I can't, I'm already forgetting what his name is, but
Alexander Wendt.
And, you know, he's talking about studying UFOs, and I guess I just think that it would be hard to do. Like, if you're looking for unidentified flying objects, like, the number of flying objects that are in the sky is pretty high. You know, like, ones that are there on purpose. Like, trying to find footage like this, even though we have a lot of cameras, I just feel like that would be a lot of, like, you'd have to have some type of algorithm to, you know, spot unusual movement. I would think. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. How do you study? Like, I guess that's the one thing that I was thinking about while I was reading the article. I'm like, how do you study this stuff? Like, even Commander Fravor, it's not like he was out there going like, oh yeah, we were out there that day to go looking for UFOs. Like, they were running a regular operation, and they happened to run into something that they could not identify.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, like, even having all these cameras and satellites, like, man, I like I said, I'm trying to figure out how you get through all of that data and all that footage and figure out what's, you know, just like a regular comet or star or whatever, and what is something that truly you don't know. Because then I guess you'd have to go from like some type of a global perspective to like, you know, a more localized camera to see if it caught something. Like,
yeah, I don't know if we could use like satellites looking down to the Earth to try to catch things flying around. But you know, like you said, there's a lot of planes flying. You know, there's a lot of drones these days flying around. I mean, it could be some kind of drone, possibly drug smugglers or something. Another ability. But, I mean, there's certainly a chance it could be aliens. I mean, people have claimed to have seen the, you know, visitors from other other worlds on this planet. And there's been stories passed down of, you know, I think this professor mentions there were medieval woodcuts that seemed to show UFOs, or also UFO stories in the Bible, it seems, or ones that have been interpreted. So yeah. if they are here, he believes they've been for a long time or been visiting for a long time, which I guess would be good news in a way. Because they haven't wiped us all out yet.
Well, yeah, I've definitely caught myself every now and again catching an ancient aliens. And there are certainly some sculptures that definitely leave you thinking like there was some type of space travel at that point. And if they did not know about space travel, boy, did they get shit lucky looking like they were blasting off in some type of spaceship type object for some of these things. Yeah, I mean, it would be good if they've been here for a long time. It would definitely be less threatening in a lot of ways. Like, if they had the chance to wipe us out by now, then, you know, if they haven't done it by now, unless it's like, oh, we're going to wait until they realize that they can wipe us out, then wipe them out, I guess that would not work out well for us. But I would think we're in pretty good hands if they haven't done anything yet.
It's hard to know how more advanced that, you know, we're gonna guess that they're advanced in our technology if they're able to elude our notice so well. But, you know, how much more advanced are they? Is it like, you know, similar to how we like go out and capture, you know, wolves and tag them, you know? I'm sure the wolf doesn't know what's going on. They probably have some weird stories to tell their mates when they get back home. Or is it more like, you know, insects, where we're the insects and we don't even really have the possibility to understand we're dealing with. And we would maybe never be able to detect them. Like, they would always be able to avoid detection because they're operating on like so much of a higher level. I don't know.
Yeah, that part would definitely be interesting. I would definitely say that their technology, again, like if there's any type of international or interstellar travel. They have definitely figured something out way ahead of us, technology-wise, at least. And that's still pretty cool that that would be a possibility. And I guess I still do believe, like, even though I don't understand how you would study UFOs, like, I guess I do feel like it's been, like, I remember thinking that it was a crockpot, a crackpot theory thing when I was younger.
Mm-hmm.
And I've definitely come to the side of, I definitely think it's happened. It's some, you know, like, I definitely think that there's some type of alien travel. Whether we've had any contact or not is, who knows, you know? Like you said, like, the Bible has stuff. There's all kinds of different old written texts that at least have some allusion that you could probably reference to space travel. And, you know, did it happen then and not now? Is it some type of some weird Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy where people from the past get, or from the future get thrown into the past and know about the future? I don't know. Some type of parallel universe situation going on?
Yeah, this guy is like a international relations is kind of his main area of study, I guess. So he did kind of a thing analysis about how, you know, governments around the world kind of have a vested interest in there not being, because that would kind of really throw their whole, like, power system into disarray if, you know, the people are not no longer be kind of in charge or the highest authority, which is kind of where they get their power from, I guess, in the modern day, you know, right. Considered the government gets its power from the will of the people. So if there's something that comes in that's more powerful than that, could be destabilizing for governments. Yeah, I don't know. Scientists also seem to be, not willing to look into it. I guess I have kind of maybe taken a different journey. I started out maybe wanting to believe in aliens more. I remember reading some of the Project Blue Book. It was something that had come out in the 70s maybe that was kind of showing some of the files that the government had been keeping on aliens or unexplained, unknown flying objects. And over time, I don't know. It is a pretty bold hypothesis, I guess. And even though there is some anecdotes, there's not really like a alien bot or alien spaceship or any kind of artifact at all that we've been able to study or to, no hard proof was what I would say. That doesn't mean it's definitely not aliens, but it hasn't risen to the level for me that it's, you know, that I'm thinking, okay, for sure it's aliens.
Yeah, and you would think that at this point, with Area 51, I know that there are people that were there that swear they were working on stuff that was alien related, but there's still, again, like, there hasn't been any physical proof that that's true.
Right.
You know,
sometimes people make up stuff.
Yeah, sometimes people make up stuff. I definitely think that it's possible, and I definitely think the government could do something underhanded like that, but I would also think that if we had gotten a hold of that technology, because when did, is Area 51, did that happen in the 50s?
I'm trying to think that's when the Rockwell thing happened. And that was kind of like maybe the original kind of rumor of where they had found a downed alien ship and brought it back to the space on Roswell. That was sometime in the 50s, I feel like.
Yeah.
But I don't know when Area 51 opened up. I remember it played a big part in the class sci-fi movie Independence Day. So it was definitely around at that point, that time. But yeah, I'm not sure where it kind of started up. I remember being surprised that you could actually, like, when the, you know, the internet was coming around and Google Maps and maybe MapQuest or whatever it was at the time, that you could actually look up Area 51 on a map. I remember being surprised that it was actually a real place.
Oh.
And you could see it. I mean, they had the satellite view blocked out, but
yeah, they said that it was,
you could see where it was.
They said it was not formerly mentioned until 2013.
Oh,
Area 51, like it from a Freedom of Information Act request. It was formally acknowledged in 2013.
Oh, shit. Well, that was, like, I think that Independence Day was in the 90s, right?
Yeah.
So, it was well ahead of its time there. It's,
Well, and I finally got to that part. Yeah, because they said the base didn't start until 55.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, because that was another one that I listened to from Joe Rogan. Bob Lazar was one of the guys that claimed that he worked on alien technology. And I guess that's another thing, like, maybe if we didn't figure out interstellar travel from the alien technology, it seems like we followed a somewhat logical path on our technologies that we've developed, and that we've just kind of built upon things. Like, I don't feel like we've ever had some weird, like, quantum leap. Like, obviously it's been a quantum leap from, like, us having to pick up a telephone that was attached to a wall and to call each other to having a Zoom meeting and recording it. But it does feel like there's been a somewhat relatively logical, you know, path for how that's taken place. And, you know, I would think if we figured out some alien technology at Area 51... that there would have been, like, a jump and some type of knowledge. Even if we don't end up getting, you know, interstellar travel out of it, I would hope that we would have found some type of technology that really blew the doors off of everything else. And, you know, I'm blown away by what technology has become today. But I do feel like still, like, if we had gone from the rotary phone to where we are now in, like, a 5-year span, I would have been going, holy fuck, we figured out alien technology. But when it's, like, a 30-year time span, you're like, yeah, I can understand how this incrementally changed from, you know, from time period to time period. Even if our technology is kind of in and of itself ramping up fairly quickly.
Yeah, it is going. It does seem like you can kind of, there's, like you said, there's no, like, technology that has seemingly come out of nowhere. It has followed from past technology and just been improvements on, which is what you would expect, I think, if you're you know, developing your own team.
Yeah, because even if aliens have a better technology, if aliens have a better technology, it'd be something that would either be, you know, I guess it'd be kind of interesting just because even our technology depends upon all these weird metals on our planet. Like, you wonder what they've had to use to kind of figure out interstellar travel, you know, how they've figured that kind of situation out. Because they obviously, I would think that you'd be curious, no matter where you were, about what if anything is out there. Because I guess that's maybe part of the alien thing that I more believe in, is that I don't know if they've ever visited us, and I definitely feel like a lot of ancient alien people undersell how well people worked together back in the day to come up with some of these stellar landmarks, whether it be the pyramids or some, you know, something else. I think they underrate human ingenuity. Just because it wasn't written down didn't mean it didn't happen.
Yeah, and I think that there's also a bit of a bias towards thinking that we're so much smarter than people in the past were, when I don't think there's much reason to... I mean, we may be better educated, but, you know, I think people back then were still, you know, had the same capacity that we do, so... you know, and... It's not like we're all that evolved in a lot of ways, you know. So,
I think a lot of events that we're not covering on this particular show in the past week have showed a very strong non-evolutionary chain. In them.
Yes, for sure. And you know, people have been people for a long time, I think so. We should give our ancestors a little bit more credit that they could figure some things out. And I think it has been plausibly explained how they built the pyramids, ramps.
In logs to roll the large stones. And I mean, it's another thing that it kind of kills me that they're like, oh no, don't worry, the Greeks built their temples. And, like, the Greeks figured out that they actually bowed their floors to make them look. Because, like, if you look at something that's truly flat, it doesn't look flat because of the curvature of the earth. But if you bend something just slightly, it actually looks flat. And so, like, the Greeks figured out how to, like, bend the slab of their building just slightly, so that it actually looked more straight. And it's just like, so these guys figured something out that's pretty badass, but they didn't get alien help. But for some reason, the Mayans needed alien help to build a pyramid that's a simple shape. Huh?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that to me, like, figuring out that the earth is round and adjust your building to the fact that if you meet the contours, it's gonna actually look straight is way more impressive than building a goddamn pyramid. Even if the stones are really like, I shouldn't even downsell that because that's the one thing that a lot of those people always worry about is the size of the stones and how large they are. And like you said, like I feel like they've had enough plausible ideas about how they transported these things that kind of figuring out the technology to building is more impressive than just building something that's really large. It's kind of, well, it goes back to the spacesuit a little bit for me. Like, back in the day, we kind of had to over-design way too much. But now that we kind of have these nice new materials, like, you don't need to over-design as much. So you don't get that bulkiness that a lot of that old technology had.
Makes sense?
Yeah.
Well,
so that's my... I think that there are aliens out there somewhere. I'm not particularly sure. Like, I guess I'm kind of on your side. Like, I don't feel like they've been living among us necessarily. Like, that would be the crazier thing, was that they've been living amongst us and they haven't said anything. But that would be... that would almost have to be what it is, you know what I mean? Like, if they are here... Like, I don't think that they've just kind of randomly caught one person's eye and went, oh man, we fucked up, I can't believe someone found us, and they've got to jet out of here. Like, if they're here, they've infiltrated. If not, I'm not sure that we've actually had first contact. So, and I guess I kind of wanted to get back to that question, because I think that kind of started a larger discussion.
Yeah, I don't know. It, like I said, I'm not convinced for sure that they are here on Earth, but mathematically speaking, it does make sense that the other life somewhere in the universe, given what we know about the size of the universe, you know, it's just somebody being advanced enough to actually travel the distance to get here, which is no gimme, I would say, a big hurdle.
That's the biggest part. Like, knowing that, and I don't even think, like, a lot of people are like, oh, you're being arrogant, we haven't figured it out, so no one else could. You know, if you know that your civilization has been around for, what is it, 50,000 years or something like that at this point? I'm trying to think of when 10,000?
For recorded history, it's about 10,000 years, yeah.
That's when first Africa was only 10? I thought Lucy was longer. I guess that's not human.
I don't know what you're talking about, civilization. I don't know where you want to draw the line there, but like, that would have been like Babylon, like 10,000 years ago.
So kind of. I'm thinking first signs of civilization in Africa. Is Africa still first, or is Babylon first?
No, Africa was was where humans evolved, from what we can tell. So I guess the first human culture would have been in Africa.
Okay.
And I think, let's say, like 60,000 years ago was when modern humans came out of Africa.
So that gives us 60,000 years of technological development or so. And this is the point that we've gotten to, which is, I think, somewhat impressive. Could another species have evolved more rapidly than us? It's a probable bet, but there's still a big leap from going from what we know to, talking about the interstellar travel that is possible way too easily in Star Wars and Star Trek and any other movie that is set in space.
Yeah, in the early part of history, we were definitely not evolving, because I think that they found there was a hand axe, I think is the name of the tool, but it was kind of like the multi-purpose tool of the time. It could be kind of used for different things. So it was made from stone. You would kind of have to chip it off a certain way to make it usable and useful. Found like that same design of hand axe over a period of like hundreds of thousands of years, like unchanged, like the very early kind of proto-humans forward. So like for the longest time, it was like thousands of generations that basically lived the same life. It is is kind of wild to think about the modern world today when things are just changing so much from generation to generation, even.
Well, yeah, and that's one I remember. I haven't listened to Dan Carlin Hardcore History in a while, but he was talking about how, like, from about the first armies that you can probably think of, whether it was, you know, Alexander the Great in Greece, up until about Napoleon, you could have a fight between armies and it would be somewhat fair. But anything past Napoleon would pretty much blow him away because of the jump in technology that happened in warfare in that time frame.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, Dan Carlin, pretty good stuff there. I can listen to some of those too. I haven't listened to them all, so.
Yeah.
He definitely goes all in on his podcast episodes with research and a little more research than we did.
Just a skosh more research than us. I mean, I didn't even research about the Steelers' numbers until we were talking about them, so.
Dan Carlin would never go for that kind of shit. correct me if I'm wrong, but have we come to the Bell Time Beer section of our show?
Yeah, we have. What would you like to talk about there, since you seem super enthusiastic about talking about beverages there, sir?
Well, it is a little different this week. This is actually something that my wife had picked out, a little baby beer can. I don't know if you can see it.
Yeah. I was kind of wondering about that. That looks like the small pop. Or, you know, small beer, but, like, it's like the skinny cans of soda.
It's 8 ounces. So, I don't know if we're going to... It's like a half pounder, I guess. I don't know if we can come up with a new term for this one, but...
Yeah, well, it's not going to be a crowler, that's for sure. But
it's
yeah,
the antique growler.
It is a half pounder, I guess.
I'm gonna go with that. But yeah, it's a pilsner, and it's a fitting mood this evening. I didn't want like a big heavy beer because I was afraid I'd fall asleep. So this has been doing me well.
As I've said, I feel like I've picked up a lot of lighter beers here, and I'm not sure that I've talked about this one on the show or not here, but our most recent visit, one of the first outside of the house and to an actual establishment, was to Rock Mill Brewery down in Lancaster, Ohio. I picked up their, one of the beers that I picked up was their Petite Saison. Which to me is just one of those kind of picture perfect saisons. Like it's kind of what I think of. It's like the nice crisp flavor, very light, very easy to drink. And I've been digging on the lighter beers. So 6% ABV. This actually is one of the higher percentage beers that I have currently. But it still isn't terribly high in the scope of things. So yeah, that Rock Mill Brewery, always if you're in the area, high suggestions for that one. So yeah, at DeFrango 11, at Gozer 33, the brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, wherever you happen to want to listen to us. We're there. We're going to have episode art. We have everything else ready for you to go. So please do that for us and have a good night.
See ya.